should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Anyways, it's good to see everybody again. So we're here to just learn a bit about the mind tonight. And just an idea that just popped up into my head is just the our minds and the habitual nature it has, and basically the practice of meditation is to try to change the habits of the mind. Yeah, and we all know that when we try to do the breath meditation, because our habits of the mind, our minds are basically trained to think from a very young age. We go to school, we watch what's on the telly, you know, we talk to one another. Our minds have always been training to, you know, do other things, but to watch like the breath or some sort of object of meditation. That's why it's it can be difficult at times.
Yeah.
and a good example is we have the dining room for the monks when we have our meal just before lunch, and we move the clock, because we only have one clock in the room, and so we move the clock so the monks could see it. So every time the lay visitors that would come here on a weekly basis to feed us, they would always look at the place where the clock used to be, and they didn't look at the place where the clock is at right now. And so we told them, the clock's over there. So then the next week they would come, and they'll look at the same spot where the clock used to be instead of where the clock is right now. And even though they know, but it's, you know, the habit of the mind, just to always go back into its old things. And that's sort of the same in my room, because I move my clock. You should try that, because human beings like to look at clocks for some reason. So I move my clock, right, to a different position. And I know I moved it. But every time I want to look for the time, I'm always looking into that old position. And this is like a couple of weeks already. And it sort of got me thinking, you know, the mind, our minds are habitually trained to be, to go back into certain patterns of thinking. Whether it's like anger, craving, or we like to think about things, and when we're meditating, we are just trying to let go of that and have put our attention like onto the breathing or on the present moment or whatever. So we have to understand that something as simple as moving your clock. You should try that at home. Moving your clock. Like, it takes a while for the mind to adjust and to know where the clock is. So instead of looking into the old place, you'll look into the new place. So maybe try that next time when you go home. It's like you have a clock in the same room, but move it somewhere in the same room, but in a different place. And you'll see, the mind has its very, very, very strong habits. So when we understand this, we understand that, like, you know, this path of practice, it just takes a while, you know? It takes time. And in order for us to sort of like reprogram the mind, we listen to the teachings, yeah, and we like remind ourselves. That's why we always come back to the Monday night meditation classes, even though we say the same thing over and over again. But these things are very helpful, and even for the monks living in Serpentine. Monks have been there, you know, 15, 20, 30 years, but they still go to the talk every week. And even though Ajahn Brahm has been the same, saying the same thing over and over again, these things have a positive impact on the mind. So as we're meditating, it's like what I've noticed is like we always lose our way if we're not enlightened. You know, the enlightened beings are the ones that can just like drop into the deep meditations. Like straight away, when you hear, I think I was listening to a talk by Ajahn Brahmali, and he was talking about the non-returner, and the way they describe it is like within a snap of a finger, you can get deep meditation. I don't think anybody in this room can do that.
No.
Maybe.
We wish.
But so we know that. So we just come here. So we're just trying to just work in our minds. Yeah, understand what our mind is like, and just work with it. Another point about Dhamma is when they talk about mindfulness, they also. Mindfulness has two qualities. The first quality is to be aware of what is going on, and the second quality is to remember the teachings. So as we're meditating, the one thing that we all know about as meditators is that pointing the mind into the direction of awareness. So knowing what is happening now, putting energy into the knower. So you know that you're in this room, you know that you're listening to a monk, you know that there's sounds outside. Like, that's the knowing mind. And the other part is remembering the teachings. So you, when you meditate, you're remembering why you're meditating. Yeah? You're not meditating so you can figure out some solution to a problem that you may have had. During the day, you're not meditating to think about what you're going to plan for in a couple of days' time. You're meditating so that you can let go. Yeah, you can live more in the present moment to understand more your mind. And remember that, And also the other thing to remember is each and every one of us have, you know, we have like an object of meditation that we like to use. Some of us are more inclined to do the breath meditation. And as you're meditating, you may see your mind just veer off to thoughts about the future. So you just remind yourself to go back to the breath. Or if some of you can't do the breath meditation, a nice meditation to do is just to be in the present moment. Just to understand what is happening right here, right now. Because I remember when I first started meditating and one of the teachings which was going around was to ask people to put their attention on the breath. And for me, I found that kind of difficult because I was sitting there trying to focus on the breath, and instead of meditating in a gentle way, I was trying to force my mind onto it. So what I noticed was that it didn't really work. I could watch, you know, maybe 5-10 breaths, and then my mind would start to wander. So I would just bring it back and trying to keep it there, and then it would just wander again. And then so after a while, I figured out that the breath meditation is not really working for me at this particular time. So then I decided to just do mindfulness meditation, just being able to sit there just to be aware and just to see what is going on. Yeah. And like I said on Sunday, once like your mind is like your mind, you get to learn your mind, and your mind is sort of like a map. You know, and then you can it's like a map, and you know where to go. Like, you know where peace is, so you go to peace. Or you know where the breath is, so you go to the breath. But at the beginning, or when you're starting off, you don't know the map of your own mind. So it could be a little bit confusing, a little bit distracted. But then after a while, after you sit down and practice this meditation, you get to understand what your mind is all about. So meditation is all about like just being easy on yourself, yeah? It's not a competition. The Buddha said, we don't live one lifetime, we live many lifetimes. So you know what he says, take your time. Don't be too hard on yourself. It's more important to feel relaxed and comfortable when you're sitting down. Yeah? Like feeling at ease, you know, like being with a good friend, or having your favorite cup of tea, or you know, the things that you like to do, you know, it makes you feel good. So in the same sense, you're trying to bring that feeling, that contentment into your meditation practice. Just being able to be content with whatever is happening now is one of these simple teachings, but it can create so much peace in a person's mind, because you can be content with anything. You can be content with a restless mind. You can be content with a mind which is angry, or you can be content with peace. You can be content with happiness. So contentment is a very important factor that we can add into our meditation practice. Because sometimes, you know, as a monk, you do a lot of meditation, and sometimes it doesn't work. Yeah, and you try to figure it out. Maybe I call up Ajahn Brahm, Dala Ajahn Brahm. Maybe I open up a book and look at the suttas. You read all the suttas, you know, and it's like, oh, the Buddha said this and the Buddha said that. But then you sit down and you're like, even have a great teacher like Ajahn Brahm, but sometimes things don't work out when you're practicing. So instead of trying to figure it out or trying to bash your way towards peace, we just be content with whatever's happening. And that, I think, I always say, like, contentment is the cause of more contentment. What you add into your meditation is what you get. Yeah. So if you add contentment, you'll get contentment, because the restlessness, the cravings, the ill will, that will disappear. And what do you have left? Is contentment. Not hard to do. But anyways, we'll we'll just crack on with it. So we just spending time in a room with like-minded people gives like a certain atmosphere to what we're doing. Everybody's just here focusing on their own mind and on the meditation. We're just sitting down, eyes closed, just letting go of the world around us. So meditation is not about getting anything or going anywhere. Meditation is about just letting go of the world outside and just giving yourself a few moments of being alone, being by yourself. That's all meditation is. That's what you're giving yourself. And whatever happens in the meditation, just allow that to happen. So you're just giving yourself an opportunity to just sit down and observe your mind. Giving yourself an opportunity to be free from any duties or whatever things you have to do. You're giving yourself a freedom which is not easily found in this world. But even though there could be music in the background, but you can still sit down peacefully. Without making it into too much of a problem. So as we're sitting, we're just being relaxed, being comfortable, having a sense of ease. And you know, whatever object of meditation you want to watch, just watch it. So you're just allowing your mind to stay relaxed, stay content for half an hour. How often do you get this opportunity to just chill out, let go of the world for a long period of time? It doesn't really happen that often. You just allow the contentment, allow the relaxation to just flow and grow. Any comments or questions? Yes.
Yeah, what about desiring deeper states of meditation?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to have any desire, but
while you're meditating or outside of the meditation?
Well, outside of the meditation, I suppose.
I think
a bit more magical to happen, I suppose.
What?
Something a bit more magical to happen.
Oh, yeah. I think, because you do get exposed to these deeper teachings of the meditation by Ajahn Brahm. He talks about it quite often, and he always talks about the possibilities that human beings have to be able to attain these states. And just listening to other monks thinking about it, and some monks say that it's not good to talk about these things because it causes craving. Yeah. So when you're meditating, you're craving for the deeper states, you know, the bright lights, the jhanas, and that craving can actually become a blockage to deepen the meditation. So what happens is when you're sitting down, you're thinking, oh, I want jhanas, I want nimittas, I want jhanas, I want nimittas. So instead of like creating more peaceful states of mind, you're just creating more craving. Yeah. And I think another, it's like a way that Ajahn Brahm sort of like diffuses this craving is that, it's also said in the suttas, is that what you think something is going to be, is going to be completely different when you experience it. So sometimes in our heads we may hear the description of what the jhanas are like. You know, like, you know, the body's not there, there's this bright light, it's just pure bliss and energy. And you can sort of like picture it in your head, but once you're actually there and experiencing it, is a completely different thing. So just having that understanding that it's not actually going to be what you think it's going to be can help you lessen the craving. But I also think, you know, it's like in the suttas, Ananda was talking to the Buddha, and I think they were talking about the topic of craving. And obviously it's a big thing in Buddhism, like craving causes suffering once you try to let go of it more and more and more. And I think the discussion went on the lines of whether craving is like bad for the practice, or is it useful? And I think, if I remember correctly, the Buddha said the craving is useful if you have like skillful craving, yeah? Because you wouldn't be here if you didn't have the craving to learn how to meditate. Or you wouldn't become interested in Buddhism if a part of you didn't have the craving to like become enlightened one day. So in a sense, craving is good if you use it wisely, but at the same time it could be bad.
So
we don't use
like
it correctly.
Craving for chocolate?
yeah. It's like, you know, when we meditate as people in our daily lives, there's a certain craving there to meditate, to get your bum on the cushion, and then, but once, that's good, you know, that's a good thing. But once your bum is on the cushion, that's when you let go of the craving. So thinking about these jhanas and things like that, in a sense they do inspire us, and they give us that understanding that the human mind has this potential to go deeper into the meditation. Because sometimes, you know, so what's the point of meditating? You're going to sit down and nothing's going to happen. I might as well just pack my bags and leave or something like that. So I think with craving, it's good and bad. Yeah.
I wanted to say that I learned tonight that I'm not alone in liking looking at clocks. I have one in every room except the laundry, the loo, and the bath. Now, if you go to IKEA, and I guess I could get clocks for those rooms too. I have one in the workshop too, and I actually use it. And of course, there is one.
Anything you want to talk about?
I was interested that as we were being peaceful and you know, you mentioned outside sounds, that I wasn't really aware of when they stopped.
Agreed.
Yeah. I hadn't noticed that they had turned off and had enough.
I was satisfied.
They were satisfied.
Yeah, I think the sun went down and they couldn't ride their bikes.
But I didn't notice it.
Yeah, I sort of noticed it, but the sound was like sort of in the background because the windows and the doors were shut and the aircon was on. Yeah, so you had that sort of white noise to sort of block out the sound. Yeah, but sometimes it's like, you know, we're peaceful and but are we really peaceful? Or are we like sleepy? You know, if you're like, sometimes as meditators, sometimes we can get confused between what's peaceful and what sleepiness is. And if you're sleepy, you're not really aware of things, you know what I mean? And did I really hear that or did I really see that kind of thing? But if you're like peaceful and aware, I think you would notice it. Like you hear the sounds and then the sounds of, oh, he's not there anymore, kind of thing, you know, so they stop playing their music. But it's kind of interesting, sometimes sleep can be sleep can overtake people's minds. You know, you hear about people driving and falling asleep and having car accidents. And even monks who do walking meditation. I've heard of a story that a monk was doing a walking meditation and you walk up and down. So he did walking meditation after the meal because he didn't want to fall asleep. But this time he fell asleep when he was doing a walking meditation. And he walked straight into the brick wall.
Does that happen often, meditating?
Falling asleep, yes, I think it's a common thing. It's one of the, I think being sleepy, a lot of people do experience that. And were you falling asleep?
No.
I think people get.
I'm always a bit worried that I will, and then I start snoring, of course. That's back in my mind.
And like, I think when we're meditating, we're trying to be as like allow things to happen as naturally as possible, and I think sometimes we get into the habit when we're feeling a little bit tired. You can actually see this happening with your mind, is you're feeling a bit tired and you're like trying to push it to wake up. I don't think that's a very good habit sort of like to get into, because you're willing the mind to do something.
When I meditate in the evening, I've eaten and I tend to get sleepy. What I've learned is that I'll get sleepy and I'll catch myself, and after first of all, I'll start seeing pictures. So it's the hypnagogic state where you start seeing pictures. I know I'm going. I'm going. So I fight it a little bit, but you know, then you know, I wake up. And then sometimes I open my eyes and just look to wake myself up if I need to. But usually after I've gone into the edge of sleep and come back out, I'm okay. And then I can meditate okay. It's been my experience for whatever that's worth.
And that's the way that we've been taught by Ajahn Brahm, is to just to make peace when you're feeling sleepy. So because if you get into the habit of trying to push yourself to wake up again, you're just actually using more energy, that energy of the mind, like trying to keep it awake. And what is actually happening is you're using up energy, so you get even more tired. So you just end up sleeping throughout the whole meditation. So instead, like Lorenzo was saying, he just allowed his mind to just drift off, just for a little while, you know. So you're just making peace with the situation, and then your mind may just, you know, fall asleep or just, you know, just get a little bit dull. But because you're not trying, you're not pushing, you're not using any energy, you're just allowing your mind to just rest that little bit, maybe for 5-10 minutes, and then it will just slowly perk up again. And then the energy that comes up is more of a like a rested, more of a meditative energy, like which has like peace and calmness associated with it, instead of like an energy which is more willful and forceful and kind of hard and blunt, which is not really nice for the mind. Yeah.
Is contentment as the object of meditation really useful?
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And just really put me into a nice place.
Yeah. I think it's a really nice one. Just like the average human mind tends to, like, you know, move around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And contentment is very useful, just a way of approaching meditation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not lucky like some people. It was like this, like Ajahn tells a story about a kid in Thailand that fails primary school, fails everything, right? Because he just had such a peaceful mind. Mm-hmm. So then he was so hopeless, his parents just moved into a monastery. You can't get a job. You can't do this. You can't. I'll send you to a monastery. It's like, thanks, Mom. But then he turned out to have a really, really peaceful mind. And when the teacher told him to, like, watch the breath, he could just watch it. No problem at all. And then we got the deep meditations and became, you know, one of these very peaceful and good monks. Yeah. But I think, like, generally, for most of us, we have stuff to work through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ajahn Chah put it quite nicely, you know, we just have, like, room with a lot of mess. Yeah. And because there's just so many things in there, because it's got a lot of things to clean up. But once we get to clean up that mess, because we went through so much cleaning up that mess, then we have more things to offer to other people. Whereas, you know, some people will have like a small room, only a few things to clean. You know, they might get peaceful, may have, but they don't really have that much to share. So, yeah. That's why they say, that's why Ajahn Chah, that people say Ajahn Chah was such a great teacher, because he had to say, people ask Ajahn Chah, why are you such a good teacher? And he says, because I had a lot of suffering in my life. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that you get, like, the more you go through, you've got something to offer, you know, to other people.
Is it different types of meditation styles?
There's like metta meditation. There's like more like the emotional, like loving kindness towards other people, like feeling, you know, feelings of kindness, and it's just more of a, like, an emotional type of meditation. And you try to build, those emotions up by using words or memories or some sort of feeling that you have to somebody that you love or care about, and you're just trying to keep that emotion, like, during the meditation, and use that as a, like, an object so you can be mindful of it and just allow that to build and build and build. But I think essentially with the meditation objects that you choose, what you're aiming for is to just be more still and be more in the moment. Yeah. And I think that's very important. If you can be more mindful and more still, then the energies of the mind will start getting better, getting stronger. And that's what you really want. The juicy stuff is the energy of the mind, just like getting stronger and stronger. Yeah.
Oh, years ago, I used to suffer with insomnia.
Yeah.
And I've tried so many different things to try and, like, deal with it.
Yeah.
Always struggle with it, and then I read up about, like, trying to meditate, trying to calm your mind to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, that I actually managed to do that. So now when I go to bed, I just close my eyes and I'm out.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but I don't dream either, so I don't remember any dreams. So I don't know if it's a big thing or a bad thing. So, as I was saying, I'm a bit worried about falling asleep here as well.
Sometimes. No, it's okay. Yeah, I mean,
if you, in different positions.
That's the thing, you know, because like what I know is if you're afraid of falling asleep, you're trying to wake your mind up, right? Yeah, you probably do the same.
My mind goes pretty fast.
Yeah, but then what happens is like when you're trying to sleep at night, you're probably trying to wake your mind up because you've developed that habit of like waking. So if you want to go to sleep, go to sleep.
Okay.
Yeah. Because once you build up the energies of the mind, it's something that's like is always there, you know. You may get tired a little bit, but because you know how to re-energize your mind, that you can just go to that place where you know the mind is kind of energetic. Yeah. Okay, it's getting hot in here. Let's go.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Huh?
Uncomfortable.
You're not warm. Yeah, the bricks just hold the heat. Yeah, because this building's in the sun all day. No worries. Oh, we're going to do some chanting. Jamie, take it away. Go on, mate.
Sacrifices from my practice. May my spiritual teachers be guides of great virtue. My mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world. May the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.